Welcome to In Season, where we explore connections between people, land, plants, and wildlife here in the Lower Columbia Pacific region. I'm Teresa Retzloff, and joining me in the studio today is Linda Brim. Welcome, Linda.
Thank you, Teresa. It's a pleasure.
Linda, you are a familiar figure to gardeners here on the North Oregon coast for so many years. You had a garden store, a garden and farm store at Miles Crossing near Astoria. You've been part of Master Gardeners forever.
Since it originated here.
You know, founding Master Gardener for Clatsop County. And but you have now been retired for 3 years.
Almost 3 years, yep.
How has that changed your relationship to your garden?
Well, I have a lot more time to enjoy it. I wish I could say it's more organized, but I have dedicated a lot of time and effort into sharing flowers for my garden, and that is an absolute joy.
I can imagine, yeah.
Not just growing them and cutting them and caring for them and looking at all the diversity in that group of plant material. I also love the artistic side of that and arranging things in a way that is artful and really colorful. And it brings so much joy to people. I share them in a assisted living facility on a regular basis. And so that's really where I've kind of focused a lot of my attention with my newfound time. But there's never enough time.
Never enough time in the garden. And you also are still involved with Master Gardeners.
Yes.
And I want to talk briefly about an event that's coming up. So it is fall here on the North Oregon coast. We're into October. And coming up later this month, you're going to be working with Master Gardeners out at the Clatsop County Fairgrounds on an event. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Sure. So the demonstration garden is just as you come onto the fairground property, is just as you get off that little footbridge from the parking area. And the Master Gardeners have been developing that for the last 25 years. And it's recently gone through a post-COVID rework. If you haven't been in the garden in a long time, you really should go take a look at it. It's always open. You can always go in and look. And this fall, our aim on the 18th of October is to show people how to lift dahlias, how to split them and store them properly for winter. And then we're also going to be focusing on irises. We have some bearded irises and some Japanese iris that are going to be, the bearded iris are already dug, German iris, and the Japanese iris we're going to be digging and figuring out where we're going to put them, because they've not been blooming. They're so crowded in there. So they do need to be lifted. We want to rework that bed. And
So I just want to interrupt you. So that's a thing. I just want to point out to people that if plants get too crowded, if it's a bulb or something like that, if there's too many of them in there, they stop blooming?
They do.
Is it just a competition thing?
It's a competition thing. And they can't pull enough nutrients out to do the full life cycle to bloom, and then they do keep putting on foliage. They just spread out. They march lateral.
It just becomes a beautiful leaf plant, but you don't get the flower that you're really going
for.
And
that's why you're growing it.
I know. Yeah. So this is sort of a winter, like you're talking about chores to do this time of year, getting your garden ready for winter. And let's just tell people the date and time.
October 18th. We're going to start at 2:00.
At 2:00.
So it'll be about an hour.
And is it a hands-on? Is it kind of like
It is hands-on. So people can come and just listen and watch, or they can bring pruners and help us get things ready for the big winds that we know are coming.
Yeah.
They can take a shovel and shovel prune some iris if they want to do that.
I would really recommend, if you're curious about any of these things, going through that with people who know what they're doing and can guide you on that. But if you can really physically do the task, there's something about it. It feels so much more secure when you're doing it with people watching you. Like you're watching them do it, and then you do it, and they're saying, "Yeah." We're like, "Ooh, you know, you can actually jam harder on that,
right.
And it's going to be okay. You're not going to kill it," because it's very terrifying the first time you actually divide a perennial.
Just knowing the right tools.
Yes,
if you've got the right tools, it's so much easier.
Absolutely,
you don't have to have a huge muscular strength or a guy in the garden necessarily to help you get stuff divided.
Yeah.
It is hard work, but with the right tools, saws, shovels, as long as things are sharp and in good shape, you'll get the job done a lot faster.
Yeah. And it's so rewarding. It's just so rewarding, too, because your garden then benefits so much. And these plants that you've invested in, that you're growing, they just perform so much better. And they
they're
so
a lot
better.
Happier.
Absolutely. So talk to me a little bit about other things that people might be thinking about doing this time of year, because I feel like fall is a tricky season for a lot of gardeners. You know, they're not quite sure what to do. And, you know, your garden just starts to die off and look a bit of a mess. And what should you do? So if there were just a few key chores.
I think getting ahead of spring. I find every day goes faster and faster, mm-hmm. and the garden season is, it just whizzes by. So everything that I can do now to help make gardening in the spring, which I don't like being out in the cold, mm-hmm. I'd much prefer to garden now. It's warm out there. There's a lot that you can get done to eliminate a lot of backbreaking labor and just annoying chores like slug control, mm-hmm. weeding. After a nice wetting rain, the weeds are going to pull out a lot easier now. If you let them go over winter, they're just going to expand, have mm-hmm. deeper roots, broader roots. They're going to be a lot more to pull out. So getting ahead of things like that. The reason I always really work hard to get rid of slugs is because right now they're reproducing.
Okay.
They are busy out there. So I haven't had good success in getting rid of snails. And in preparation for today, I did see if there was any new research on how to control snails, because they're so ubiquitous and they're in my dahlias all over.
They are so heartbreaking.
Pick a flower and there's maybe not a chew hole in it because that little guy just climbed up there 6 feet, but he's mm-hmm. hanging out. I was shocked how tall that plant was. So hand picking is really the best solution I've found for snails.
And that means you have to get out there and get into your garden and look for them.
Yep. And put on some latex gloves. Just dump them in a bucket of water or cook them on the asphalt.
Throw them over your fence. I still remember the year that I went through Master Gardener training and the class that was like pest control. And it was, you know, kind of a bit of a sleepy, boring class. But then when the conversation turned around to slugs and snails and how to kill them, the entire room came alive with the most gruesome stories.
Oh, yeah. Everybody's got a story.
Oh, so people were so excited to talk about these horrible things that they were doing. And I'm like, okay, people take this really
seriously.
Well,
and there's sensitive people that mm-hmm. just don't like the idea of having to kill something. Mm-hmm. So
I'm a big toss it over the fence.
Yeah. Or put it in a Ziploc baggie and put it in the garbage. You know, a quick and painless death to me is more humane.
Yeah. It's like,
but
squish it. I don't know.
Not everybody has the stomach for that.
No, I've gotten so much better at it.
Yeah. Yeah. When you see the damage, the other thing that we do in our garden is we have chickens. So we open the gates in the garden and just let them come in. And they make a mess. They
dig everywhere.
Rototill all the mulches, the straw, the bark dust, the leaf litter. They pull all that out. So we do have a mess to clean up when they're done. But they're doing us such a favor because they're going after all of the slug and snail eggs.
Yes.
So getting ahead of spring that way is huge.
Yeah. They really do make a huge difference in that sense, yeah.
The other thing that right now in our garden and storage sheds, greenhouse, we are going after rodents because we've had an explosion of rodents. I'm not sure, but a lot of people are expressing concern about the rodent explosion.
And this year has been bad.
We don't have as many raptors and predators.
Predators.
So you got to be careful with what you use for rat baits, because if you put a rat bait out that kills a rat and then a predator comes along and eats it, then you lose the bird. You've lost that rodent control device, which is a bird.
Yeah.
So and again, people get really squeamish about having to kill things. If you do decide that you want to trap them in a bucket, which is effective, you can use your little track that they walk up to a bucket and they have a little teeter-totter on them. Mm-hmm. They fall in and then you can
dump out the drowned rat.
Yeah. But you have to go 5 miles and you know, people don't appreciate having rodents dumped somewhere else. So, you know, you got to be cognizant about where you take them.
We have so many rats on our farm and it's just been a constant battle. We do a lot of trapping. Again, also very cognizant of wildlife, so we don't use poison. My husband was just researching apparently there's like a food that has birth control in it for rats.
Really?
And he's like, I'm going to order some of this. And apparently it's like a food that they like to eat, but it is like some kind of birth control for rats. So then they don't reproduce. And I'm like, well, there is a way of maybe like cutting it down. I don't know. We're going to try anything. Because the thing is, they're really smart too. So if you use traps, after a while, they get to know like, oh yeah, don't go in that box. Don't trust that.
Right. And they...
And you have to swap out your traps.
When we started this program, we started getting the big guys.
Yeah.
And that was great. And now it's the young, dumb ones that are getting caught in the snap traps.
The old ones learn.
They do.
Yeah.
And I don't know how a dead rat tells their...
Well, they see the dead rat. They like the younger, the other ones are like, oh, look, you know, Jimmy went into the box and he didn't come out again. Let's not go there. Yeah, rodents have been, and voles really exploded on our farm this year too, this year. It's just been an epic year for pests.
Yeah, it's crazy. So I really do believe.
So rodent control this time of year is key.
Well, same thing. They're going to be, as soon as we get our first hard freeze, they're going to be running for your basement, you know, any place they can get in.
Yeah.
And so covering those holes and making sure that you've stuffed any cracks where they might be sneaking in is a good thing to do. You don't want to cover holes and lock them in. Mm-hmm. So try to do it now when they're not in there. We have some really capable people that are licensed to do the type of rodent control that requires care in not killing other wildlife. So that's something else to consider if you've got a serious problem.
Yeah. So definitely thinking about controlling pests is good this time of year. Are there other pests that you're thinking about? I mean, because I know there's a lot of insects that overwinter as well. So is clearing weeds kind of helpful for that too?
Well, just monitoring what you have. And the flea beetles in my dahlias were a big problem, but I didn't treat for it at all. So it just depends on how big the problem is. Things you want to be watching for are the marmorated stink bug. That is an up-and-coming threat, and we know it's moving our way. So it's the marmorated stink bug is a problem because if it gets in your house, they multiply so rapidly and they leave a stink. That's why they call them a stink bug. So a really nasty one, it's good to get things identified. If you see a new bug that you're not familiar with, get it identified. But
there are some really good apps you can use. Like if you have a smartphone and you can take pictures of it, or the very least, if you can capture it, you could bring it to the extension office or try to get a picture of it. But I think that's a great idea if you're unfamiliar with an insect, because also it might not be a bad guy.
Right.
And so don't just automatically kill every insect that's out there.
Right.
Some of them are doing the hard work of killing the ones you don't want.
Yeah, the birds have to eat. And coming back to slugs, you know, I don't like snakes. Mm-hmm. They really bother me.
But they are so good at
slug
control.
I was really disappointed this year that we have on our front porch an area where the snakes would just love to sun themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I would walk outside and get ready to water, lean down to get the hose, and there's the snake.
Yeah.
So I learned to not freak out and just accept them. So I was disappointed. I didn't see one snake out there this year. But my husband said, don't worry. They were on the back porch.
So they moved.
So I guess they got tired of me
screaming. But snakes are fantastic.
They are.
They are fantastic. Slug control in particular, I think. So, yeah, I'm always excited. I'm with you. I don't like how they move. It's something about that, the movement. I can't pick them up. My husband can pick. Packy's fine. He can pick up anything.
I have some childhood trauma with snakes being foisted upon me.
Okay. Well, that's totally understandable. Yeah. They kind of creep me out, but I love them and they're so beautiful. And I know they're doing good work.
Yeah.
So I think finding ways to create habitat for them and protect their habitat, I think, is good.
So we also used glue traps and quickly realized that glue traps are a pretty vicious way to die because they literally starve and dehydrate. It's an awful way to die. And we were catching non-target critters like skinks and lizards. So, we had to ixnay the glue boards.
Yeah.
So you want a quick, just a
quick kill if you can.
Quick kill. Yeah.
I mean, this is the hard thing about being a gardener or being a farmer or living someplace. And it's, it, to me, it says something about how divorced we are from nature and how nature works and these things. And like, we are asserting ourselves in these areas. We don't want these critters. They want to be there. You know, I mean, nature's not pretty, and most things don't die very well in nature anyway. And so sometimes you, like, this is your role. If you don't want these things in your garden, sometimes the answer is you've got to kill it. And to me, you're right. The most humane thing to do is to just try and do it fast and just be like, okay, and I'm sorry about this, and you can apologize to the animal, but also, like, this is the balance. This is the agreement that we're making.
Yeah.
I don't want you in my garden, and so I'm going to try and make you go away. And
the other thing people can do is do trap gardens and plant things that you know bugs are going to be attracted to, so that they go there and not in your desirable plants.
Yeah, that's another good way of doing it.
So meadow, a little, you know, developing a little meadow area.
That you just let go and have some beautiful...
Which I've had to wrap my mind around, because I've always perceived that as a weedy look.
Oh, it's beautiful.
And as you get into fall and things, you know, the seed heads develop and, you know, they color up. A lot of them will get good fall color. It has its place. So that might be another way people can direct traffic away from their more valuable plants.
I think that's a great idea.
And you're going to increase pollinators.
Absolutely. And like, the seed heads are great, you know, forage for birds in the
right.
fall. I mean, there's lots of benefits to encouraging kind of a meadow habitat in, you know, if you aren't a big fan of mowing lawns, that can be a wonderful thing to do with it. This is such a great conversation. And I just want to reintroduce you, for anyone who's joined this show before, after we started. So on In Season today, I'm talking to Linda Brim, who has just years and years of knowledge about gardening here in the North Oregon coast area. And we're talking about this time of year. It's fall. What are the things that you do to get ready for spring next year, really? Because the things we do now are setting us up for a better spring. We've tackled a lot of pests and things now that people can be doing to help their soil be in better shape for spring.
Absolutely. So composting, if you haven't tried it, it's super easy. It can be really complicated if you get into the chemistry of it. But I recommend people just do it. Don't be raking leaves, bagging them up, and sending them off to the landfill. Mm-hmm. That is such a wasted resource. So leaves are the easiest way to compost out there. Mm-hmm. And it's just raking them up and putting them where you want to cover the ground. And what that will
do... Using them as mulch.
Yeah, absolutely. What that will do is prevent water erosion and compaction when it does start pouring rain. And it increases the soil microbes, because they're going to come in and start breaking all that down. It looks beautiful.
Yeah, I think they're a beautiful, beautiful mulch.
Absolutely.
It breaks my heart when I see people bagging their leaves. I just want to go over and say, could I have those, please? And there's a thing to do, you know, maybe you don't have big deciduous trees in your garden, but you might have neighbors that do.
They want that.
And
they want that stuff.
Just go through your... I do that as I drive around town. I'm like, oh, I wonder if I can go steal a bag of those.
And leaves. You can actually compost in a bag.
Mm-hmm.
You can poke holes in it. And
just let it break down, and it's amazing mulch.
Yeah. So the Master Gardener program through OSU Extension offered a 4-course composting program. The mm-hmm. next, the last one is coming up this weekend. Mm-hmm. But I took that just because I needed a refresher on the nuts and bolts of composting. And mm-hmm. it's super easy. So what we did in our garden, Mike took some cattle panels mm-hmm. and made a 4-sided compost bin with a zip tie door on the front mm-hmm. so that when it fills up and I'm ready to use the product out mm-hmm. of there, it's easy to get to.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just dumping stuff in there, letting it pile up.
So it's just a cold compost pile, just a passive.
I do want to build some heat, but mm-hmm. while it's young, so there's twigs and sticks in the bottom for mm-hmm. aeration. And then when it gets going a little bit, I'm going to put a perforated pipe down the middle.
Okay.
It's roughly 3.5 square.
Yeah.
And it's recommended that you have at least 3 to 4 feet.
Okay.
For a good concentrated heated pile.
And
because ideally you want to get the heat up to 140
mm-hmm.
to kill pathogens and seeds, but some seeds you're not going to lose. So be careful about putting certain things in there. Like if you put tomatoes from your uneaten salads in there, you're going to see a lot of tomatoes popping up next year.
Squash, too.
Yeah.
There's lots of things that can, and that can be sometimes delightful. They're easy plants to identify and pull.
I had a couple of hanging baskets that had some mystery plants coming up, and I knew it was in the squash family. They turned out to be pumpkins, so I replanted them in the beds, and we got some great pumpkins off.
That's fantastic.
But I think the mice did that for me. But
yeah.
And then we have horses, so we have a lot of horse manure, and I have been using that also to top dress gardens. So that's just a real passive way to compost, and most people don't have access to that kind of high production. You get a lot every day, so it's good to be able to reuse that.
Yeah.
However, it's cold, and which means the seeds are not getting cooked out of there. So when we use that as a top dressing, it will produce a lot of grasses, and they're easy to hand pull. So I don't worry about it too much. I'm just careful where I put it.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's just be mindful about how you're composting. And if you are just using raw materials and using that as a mulch, just think about are there seed heads in it for something that you don't want growing there?
Right.
Then maybe don't use that seed head.
Yeah. And if it's something really invasive, I mean, obviously, if you've got morning glory, if you've got anything, close to horsetail, be very, very careful.
Yeah.
So if you're not sure what something is, get it identified before you compost it.
Yeah. That's a really smart move. Yeah. If it's a plant you don't want around. Yeah, maybe just make it go away.
Yeah, and even where you set your compost bin. So we did a bin in one of our demonstration gardens, and the soil underneath had grasses. So we had to figure out, okay, how are we going to eliminate those grasses from coming up and through? And even siting it, they had a little bit of bindweed in there, so they couldn't site it in specific areas because that bindweed is definitely going to invade, and then you're putting that out and spreading that all over the garden. What a nightmare.
Yeah.
So things can go wrong, but I encourage people to try it because it is black gold.
Yeah.
And
so often we're like cutting things down in the garden, and you're putting it in your green bin, or you're throwing it away somehow. And that is like the raw material that's going to amend your soil and make it so much better.
Yeah.
So much better to just take all those materials and compost it on site, compost it in some way, whether it's just as a top mulch or in an intentional pile.
Yeah. And it's going to keep stuff out of the landfill.
I know. I know we're starting to not run out of time completely, but we're heading towards running out of time. And I want to ask you this question because we were having a long discussion about it before we started recording. And I wanted to talk to you about lime.
Yes.
Soil testing and lime, because tell me about why people would put out lime.
So the rain is acidic. And the amount of rainfall that we get makes our soils acidic. So depending on what you're growing, some things need a more neutral pH. Some things like azaleas, rhododendrons, camellias, they like an acidic soil. So we don't blanket lime everything.
Yeah.
But
blueberries like acidic soil too.
They do.
Yeah.
So lime helps the nutrients assimilate into the plant. The plant can break it down when the pH is correct. If not, nutrients are tied up. So that's why we need lime. And there's several different types of lime. You were saying you like the egg lime because it's very economical. It's a
very fine powder.
It is a fine powder, but the actual particulate is a bigger particle, so it takes longer to break down. And now you can buy micronized lime, which is way more expensive, but it breaks down faster.
Yeah,
it's really hard to find in this area right now. And
we were just talking about that. It was challenging.
Yeah. So
there are, I mean, call around to your nurseries. I know there's we've got some good places here. And I think just call and ask, because really you want like a 50 pound bag.
Yes, you do.
And that's the most economical way to buy it. You want to try and get a 50-pound bag. And if your garden store does not stock it, harass them until they do.
Yes.
Because that is, you just have to put out a good amount of lime. And fall is a great time to put it out, because it does take a while to break down. That's partly why I put out the ag lime in the fall, because it's going to take a while for it to break down. So when I need it to be present in the soil in the spring, it's going to be there.
Yeah. Fruit trees need it. Your prunus family, not so much, but the fruit trees definitely benefit.
Mm-hmm.
I know this has been a bumper crop for pears, so people probably aren't thinking. They mm-hmm. probably don't have that mindset, but they really do need lime. They'll do better with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I would definitely put some pressure on locals at local outlets.
Mm-hmm.
70s, Brims, or Rainus now, and Two Old Goats are three places where I would check.
Yeah.
And there's probably others in the area where you could hound.
Just try to get some locally. It's one of the most valuable things. Because, again, most of the things that we're trying to grow here are not native to this area. And a lot of them are plants that just want a higher pH. And sometimes if you wonder why your plants are struggling, well, it could be. I mean, you can also invest in a soil test, which I think, especially if you have a big garden or like a big vegetable garden and you're struggling with why isn't it doing well, like getting a soil test and understanding, well, how bad is your pH?
Well, and especially if you're adding a lot of ingredients, you know, a lot of people used to use wood ash and do all kinds of crazy amendments. And you don't know, especially if you've moved into a property or you're new to the area, it's really good to know what's in that soil. If it's a building site, there may have been drywall that was stored and, you know, covered up. We run into that where it's...
A soil test reveals a lot your garden and about... And there are... I mean, it can sound intimidating. And I would just say, like, do a little research. You can call the extension office and get some advice on how to take a soil test. And labs you can send it to, but you just, you know, basically you dig up a bunch of soil from different parts of your garden, combine it all in a Ziploc bag. You know, you need to print out a form from a lab, and they can give you a list of labs that you can send it to. And you mail it to them. I just did this for my farm. So mailed off a big box of soil to a lab, and I'm waiting on my results, and I'm really excited about it. And then the results themselves can be a little intimidating. But again, I think you can reach out to Extension Office, and they can help you interpret it. Or there are, like, you can look online, and it can explain to you.
Well, I think it's really important to pick a lab that will give you a narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And Shannon can probably help people with deciphering what that report gives.
Yeah. But soil testing is just, especially if you're having problems in your garden and you don't know why, it really might be in your soil.
Yeah.
And it can be such a revelation of like, oh, okay. That might
the other thing
it.
I want to throw out there that's really interesting about composting is the bioremediation that happens. So if you're concerned, if you want to go completely organic, which we're trying to do at the demonstration garden, we've kind of committed to not using chemicals out there. The compost will do a lot to reduce the chemical load in your soils. So you can get carried away with compost, though. You don't want more than 5% organic matter in your soil. So you can't just dump and grow straight in compost.
More is not always better.
Not always better. So that's a lot.
I just want to encourage people to, if you can, make it out to the fairgrounds October 18th, 2 p.m.
Yep.
Linda's going to be out there with a bunch of other master gardeners, dividing perennials, talking about fall.
How to prune things so they don't get wind whipped.
These are all great things. So, and if you need more information, maybe contact the extension office.
Yes.
And ask them about it. We really encourage you to sign up for the Clatsop County Extension Office email.
That gets you an update. Usually we get one weekly from Shannon as a master gardener. And it's really valuable because Shannon has been putting on so many educational opportunities. Yeah. There's a lot offered.
There's so much good stuff out there. And get connected. And that is a great way to connect. If you haven't been through the Master Gardener program, maybe think about taking it.
Yeah.
It's really great. And you learn a lot about gardening in this area.
Yep.
So, Linda, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks
Teresa.
So much for joining us today on In Season. Thanks to everyone. And get out there and get in your gardens and compost things.
Yeah.
Thanks.